Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome. How are you doing as we enter our fourth week of lockdown in the UK, or we're just about to, and wherever you are in the world, I hope you're getting on okay. I'd love to know, do drop me an email or send me a message, let me know how you're doing at this time. It's been really interesting to see how actually it's polarised people. I'm finding that there are some people who really are, as I said in last week's podcast, I think, they really are embracing this time, and they're managing to really, you know, do a lot. And, it's actually proving incredibly productive for them because they're able to use this isolation and lockdown to really kind of get fit and learn a language and, do the garden and do the baking and all of those things. But then there are other people who are just really suffering right now, really suffering, and finding that they, where they normally have a lot of energy, they're actually operating at about 30% of their normal energy levels, or certainly 50%. And I'm a little bit like that, actually, as someone who's usually quite extroverted. And I love being around other people and meeting people and getting out and about. I go a bit stir crazy. I'm coping. I'm absolutely fine. But I've noticed that I have, certainly in terms of productivity, I've been kind of way behind my usual levels. I'm sleeping a lot more, for starters. And I think that's actually relatively common. I think we're kind of using a lot of brain power to work this out and process all this new stuff. And I think I spoke last week about the mad dreams, absolutely mad dreams I'm having. I did say last week I have some very low cost coaching on offer, if that's of interest, with just a donation. So get in touch if you're struggling right now, because one thing I do know is that this has tipped a lot of people up. There's been a lot of people who were very solid in their sobriety and really doing well, and then this has just crept in, and the wine witch comes back in and knocks in your ear and says, oh, these are very unusual times, and you've got this now. You've been sober for 3 weeks or 4 months or a year. You've got this. You can have one drink. Of course you can. It's someone's birthday and you're going to be on Zoom, and you can't see them, but the very least you can do is chink a glass of champagne, on Zoom when you have your phone call or whatever. And I've heard a lot of people in a lot of members in the Sober Club have said that they have had these thoughts and these kind of little triggers that kind of come out of nowhere. So, and I think the Easter weekend was particularly hard for a lot of people, when a time when they would normally be with family and friends and celebrating and having family meals and going away and all of that. And so, they're odd times, and we have to find ways of really, really dealing with this and really making it absolutely clear to ourselves that not drinking is non-negotiable. it isn't up for discussion. It's just a thought that, they are just thoughts, the cravings. They are just thoughts, particularly if you've had, some time of sobriety. And I would really encourage you, if you are going through all of this and if you have started drinking again, I'd really, really encourage you to just kind of go back to basics. In the Sober Club, we have an online course called Get the Buzz Without the Booze. And module one, lesson one is we start by asking you to determine your big why. And everything comes back to that, really, doesn't it? What is your why? Why do you want to ditch the booze? And if the answer to that is, well, I don't, I'm quite happy drinking, well, then off you go. But if the answer is, because I know that, I'm a better person when I don't drink, because I know all the benefits, because I'm calmer without the booze, because my anxiety is less, and on and on and on. So what is your why? And really, really get to grips with what that is, because it's so important to remind yourself of that. And then to ask yourself whether, if in a year's time, if you were to look back at this date, I mean, everything's going to feel very different, we hope. And you're going to look back to Easter 2020. And do you want to look back and say, oh, yeah, that was the time I started drinking again, you know? So ask yourself those questions. And as I say, if you're struggling, if you want some help, do reach out for help. I've said a lot recently that I'm really convinced that there's people who wouldn't normally be tipped up right now who are being tipped up. So don't let that be you. Just reach out and get a reset, get a reboot, if you like. Obviously, you're very welcome to come and join us in the Sober Club if you're not already a member. There is a small membership fee, but there's a massive support, though I'll say so myself. It is an amazing, amazing community. Masses of content in our membership portal. So check that out. I've got such a great guest for you today. Really, really pleased that I was able to speak with Neil Shah, who is from the Stress Management Society. And well, I'll let him share his story. I didn't even realise when I decided to interview Neil. I've seen some of the incredible work that the Stress Management Society do. I mean, they've got all these amazing free resources and just fabulous funky graphics and little calendars and tips. And as it's, Stress Awareness Month in April, and it's so very relevant to everyone right now, I had decided to interview Neil anyway. And I had no idea that Neil has been sober for 18 months. So we'll talk about that on the interview as well. So really hope you enjoy this. He's got some great gems to offer. Welcome, Neil. I'm so pleased to be able to interview you. Never been a more perfect time than to hear some of your stuff. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for having me.
Anyone who is watching this on video will see you've got a very funky living room or lounge or whatever. I love it. I know you're turning this time into something sparkly, which is great. Just before we get into all of this, the amazing work that you do with the Stress Management Society, just tell us a little bit about your story and where the booze fits in or not.
Where the booze fits in. Reaching for the bottle as we speak. So I started this organization, the Stress Management Society, 17 years ago. Not necessarily because it was a professional desire or it was my kind of career aim. It was more, I set this organization up because it was something I needed and I couldn't find what I was searching for out there. So I decided to do something about it. To give you a bit of a background, I started my first business when I was 24, which was an IT recruitment firm. I got into that field not necessarily because I cared about recruitment or helping people find jobs or anything like that. I was 24. I cared about money. I was in a very ego-driven state, and I saw that it was a great business opportunity to make a lot of money. And I don't know if you've ever seen the film Wolf of Wall Street, Jamie.
Yeah.
I watched that movie, and I thought to myself, this is my life story. I felt like I was like literally looking at someone characterizing my story. Because that's very much what happened to me. Too much, too young, too quick.
Burnt out.
Yeah. So, in the first year I made £700,000. I turned it into a multi-million pound international business, won the Young Entrepreneur of the Year award, got invited to number 10 Downing Street to have breakfast with the Prime Minister. It was this massive skyrocket to success. But because I didn't really have a true value of what I'd accomplished, I made some very, very poor decisions. And I was, burning the candle at both ends. I was working hard, but I was also partying hard and drinking a lot, drugs, fast lifestyle, fast cars, fast people, that kind of thing. And when you're on the path that doesn't serve your ultimate destiny, the universe has a way of giving you a bit of a course correction. And I'm sure that many people are listening today can relate to that, where there's something quite challenging or dramatic that happens in your life, whether that's a breakup of a relationship or health failure or whatever. And we can look at that as a disaster, or we can look at that as an opportunity and use that as an opportunity to reset and reboot ourselves. And I think one thing we can talk about later is how this, what we're going through right now, is a potential reboot opportunity, a reset moment for all of us.
Yeah.
But when it happened to me, I didn't look at it as a reset or a reboot. For me, it was the end of the world. It was everything that I defined myself by disappeared in a very short period of time. I lost my business, lost my money, cars were repossessed. Most of the people I thought were my closest friends turned their back on me. The person I was in a relationship was cheating on me. It's like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong in a very short period of time. The coping mechanism I turned to was alcohol, and I basically found myself in a very deep, dark valley in my life. So at the depths of that experience, I sadly ended up choosing the ultimate permanent solution to a temporary problem. And just for purposes of openness, the first time I shared this part of the story was about 18 months ago. So that's basically 15 years after the fact. And up until then, it was only a handful of people that knew that I'd sought this course of action. I ultimately got to the point where I felt like there was no reason to be here anymore. There was no point in continuing my life because everything that I felt had defined me had disintegrated. So, as I said, I decided to check out, and I tried. And thankfully, I failed. But when you hit that kind of a rock bottom experience, and let me just explain the reason I'm sharing this today, is by being willing to talk about my story and my experiences, I'm hoping that there are people out there that are feeling this way or are suffering to the point where the emotional pain they're in is so great, they will seek any solution for it to end. So know that you're not alone. There are other people that have been through this. Someone that's become a friend of mine, Johnny Benjamin, who wrote a book called Stranger on the Bridge, has also been talking about his experience, and he's now kind of a global advocate for mental health. And I think it's really important that we do get more comfortable sharing our experiences so people, when they hit those kind of depths, that they know they're not alone. There are other people out there that have been through these kind of challenges.
Yeah.
And as I said, thankfully I failed. But when you've got to rock bottom and you've attempted to check out and that hasn't worked out, there's nowhere else to go other than try and figure out how you get yourself back up again. I was used to being master of my own destiny, captain of my own ship. And all of a sudden, I was completely out of control. I had no power or control over my circumstances, what happens next. And I spent several months in what I consider to be the deepest, darkest valley I've ever been in my whole entire life. And eventually got to the point of getting really fed up of being stuck in this place. And all I could think about is, how do I get myself back on top of the world again? And the first thought that came to me is, I need to get on top of the world. So I need to go to the highest place I can think of. Highest place I could think of was Mount Everest, and this is a much longer story for another time. We can have another discussion about this at some point in the future. But in 2003, I decided to travel up to the Himalayas, and there's much more to this story, but I'm just going to keep it brief. Decided to travel up to the Himalayas and attempt to get myself up Mount Everest. William Blake said, "Where men and mountains meet, strange things happen that don't happen when you're and honestly, there's never been a truer word. When you are in an environment where all you can focus on is staying alive and getting to camp in the evening, it very much simplifies your life. And your problems at home, and the fact you've got no money, and people you care about turn their back on you, and relationships disintegrate, and the cars are gone, etc., etc. Those things are irrelevant. They're meaningless because you've literally got to focus on one foot in front of the other, because otherwise you will die, quite literally." I didn't know this at the time, but in hindsight, upon reflection, that was my first experience in mindfulness. Mindfulness quite literally means being present in the moment with no judgment. And if you are not mindful when you're climbing a mountain, it will be the end of you, quite literally. The focus on what is happening right now, not what's going to happen in a couple of hours, and not what happened a few months ago, or not your problems at home, or what you're going to do about money when you get back, because those things will quite literally potentially cost you your life. So it was a very, very powerful experience in mindfulness. And having this extended, couple of months out there and, obviously living very mindfully, it afforded me what can be best described as a bit of a spiritual epiphany. I don't come from a religious or a spiritual background as such. In fact, the only religion in my house growing up, Liverpool Football Club. My dad was a diehard Liverpool fan. I'm not, just for the record. I guess I kind of had this moment where it could well have been as a result of oxygen deprivation or tiredness or whatever, where I literally was on my hands and knees, crying my eyes out, having a conversation with the spirit of the mountain is the best way I can describe it. And that dialogue essentially was along the lines of, you have just been given the most incredible gift. What are you going to do with it? And that gift was this experience I'd had. And how was I going to use this experience for good rather than sitting there wallowing in my own misery? And that's kind of where the inspiration and the motivation and the desire to set up the Stress Management Society came from, where at that point, all I knew was I wanted to help other people that had gone through the same kind of experience that I went through. Didn't know what that looked like or what shape or form that took. I just knew I wanted to help people. And I kind of came back from my time in the Himalayas with a desire to make a difference. The first couple of years, I guess what I could be best described as a human version of Lassie, wandering around from town to town trying to help people. I got qualified as a coach and a counsellor and a variety of other complementary therapeutic approaches like clinical hypnotherapy. And kind of did a bit of coaching, a bit of counselling. Wasn't really making much of a massive difference, but you know, doing something I felt was serving the world in a positive way. But very quickly I realized it wasn't sustainable because I couldn't pay my own bills, and I really wanted to make a big difference and wasn't really doing that with the approach that I'd taken. And then the penny dropped. I've got a background working with large organizations, speaking at conferences, making a massive difference, and I decided to add that to our approach and started to do sort of corporate and national programs and really spreading the word of what we were doing. I'd written a couple of books at this point. And that's where really things started to take off. And the rest, as they say, is history now. I'm very fortunate that I get to travel the world. I get to work with a variety of different organizations, speaking at a number of different international conferences, do a lot of radio and television work. And I get paid to do this. I can happily do this for free. It's a bonus that I get paid to do this because this isn't my job. It's my passion in life. It's just, as the Japanese say, I found my ikigai, where my purpose, passion, and reason for existence have come together, and I get to express that in a way that is adding positive value to the world.
What's that word? I like it.
Ikigai. So ikigai, it very literally translated, means the reason for being. It's the Japanese philosophy of the reason for being. Everybody to look up. It's where what you do, who you are, what you believe in, where everything comes together every day is an expression of your reason for being.
I love it. I mean, I talk about this all the time, this purpose, this who are you, love it. What's really interesting about the story you've just shared is that, of course, you know, now in recent years and times, we most of us talk a lot about stress. We hear about mental health issues. People are much more open. But back then, when you started all of this, you would have been one of the few.
I was literally spending much of my time banging my head against a firmly closed door.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of responses you get at an organizational level, well, we don't want to talk about stress because if we do, everyone's going to come down with a stress disease. Or we'll be opening a Pandora's box, or, you know, what is this nonsense kind of thing. You know, introducing myself as a stress management professional, people say, well, you know, their response would be, what are you, like a yoga teacher or a massage therapist? They couldn't get the fact that I'm actually sort of a, you know, I now view myself as a management consultant that specializes in people, culture, well-being. And at that time, it was something that people just didn't want to talk about because it's viewed as a sign of weakness. It's pathetic. It's just pull your socks up and get on with it.
Yeah.
Even though it was an issue, it was something that was kept in the background. I think we have matured, or we're starting to mature as a society, because today, I spend much of my time at board level talking to, you know, the senior leadership of some of the biggest organizations on the planet that are looking at this as a strategic proposition. Back in the day, you'd be speaking to, if you were lucky, a low-down HR advisor that would be, oh, can you come in and do a one-hour workshop? That was at best, if you could even get your foot in the door. So I think we've started to get better recognizing this. However, too little, too late. You know, ultimately, at the moment, we're in the middle of a crisis, the coronavirus crisis, and, you know, people are stuck at home, which is why we're not sat in the same room that we're doing this via Zoom. To date, we get 130,000, 140,000 people have died of coronavirus, maybe 150, I don't know the latest statistics. And it really started to rear its head in December. So in a five-month period, we've lost about 150,000 people. In the year 2018, we had about 3 million people that took their own lives across the planet. Most of them for men under the age of 45 or 15 to 29 year olds.
Wow.
In the period we've lost 140, 150,000 people for coronavirus, we probably lost, and I can only base this on 2018, 2019 figures, that this year the numbers are going to be statistically significantly higher because more people are suffering from mental and emotional challenges and more people are going to decide to check out because of the pressure they're experiencing. But even if we base it on last year's figures, in the time we lost 140, 150,000 people to coronavirus, we've lost about 350,000 people to suicide. This mental health, and obviously I'm talking about the worst case scenario, you know, when mental health gets so bad that people decide to check out, that's the people that have sought the ultimate permanent solution to a temporary problem. And for every person that decides to take their own life, there's probably 20 times that are suffering incredibly. Mm-hmm. Just like for every person that dies of coronavirus, there's probably, you know, 100 times that are at home with, you know, the ill. There's, you know, thousands upon hundreds of thousands of people that are in hospital on ventilators. So, you know, if we put it into context, yes, we have a pandemic of this coronavirus, of COVID-19. We have a much, much, much bigger pandemic of mental health issues that no one is talking about, that no one is doing anything about. We are not taking concerted national and international action against this, even though it's a bigger issue that's costing us more lives and more misery than the one that we've put ourselves into lockdown for.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting is, I definitely want to talk more about the current situation we're in and how it's affecting it. But I'm just interested in your view. Before all of this, as you say, those numbers were, I mean, I had no idea the numbers were that high. That's absolutely staggering. But before
3,000 people every day.
Yeah, it's incredible. So before even this current pandemic, all of this was rocking. So my question is, in the years that you know, we've already said you were one of the first doing this and knocking on doors and people didn't even know what you were on about, really. Now, in more recent years, we do talk about it, but has the level of people, are there more people suffering? Are there like lots more people suffering than there were when you started? Or is it roughly the same number, but more are willing to express it now? In other words, what else has changed before we even get onto the current crisis? What's changed over the years that you've seen that's made a difference that more people are suffering, if they are?
Let me answer that question by asking you a question. How has your life changed in the last 17 years? If you go back to 2003 or the turn of the century, let's say, the year 2000, how is your life different today than it was in the year 2000?
Mm, yeah, way more stress.
And why? What's the reason for that?
Well, partly it's bloody internet, social media, reliance on constantly being on.
Absolutely. This isn't stress. I had someone, a much older person the other day saying, grown up in the Second War, you know, during the Blitz, that was stress. Well, actually, I disagree. And it's not to diminish the fact that it must have been quite harrowing to be around during the Blitz. And it was interesting, the Queen in a speech the other day, she likened what we're experiencing now to the Second World War, and a few people have drawn that comparison.
She also mentioned meditation, by the way. I'm sure you noticed that. That was quite cool.
It was really heartwarming to hear her say those things. The difference was, like, let's say during the Second World War, for example, there was one enemy. We rallied. We came together. Yeah. There was one thing for us to worry about. Life was a lot simpler then. There was a sense of connection of community. We don't have that anymore. Chronic loneliness is one of the biggest mental health issues affecting modern Britain, to the point we've got a loneliness minister. Now, there is more of us than ever before. We are better connected, you know, digitally than at any point ever before. Yet we are lonelier and more isolated than at any point in recorded history. Primarily because the amount of information that people are subjected to from the moment you wake up, you turn that device in your pocket on, the devices that didn't exist 17, 18 years ago, the iPhones and the the iPads and laptops and smartphones and smartwatches, etc., the social media, it's all taking you away from physical reality into this virtual reality, which is not real. So a lot of people are spending their lives consumed with things that are not real. You know, the fake news epidemic is a part of that. We were just, you know, just literally being hit by a tsunami of information 24/7, and it's overwhelming. We've been given images of what your life should be like, which are sanitized Instagram pictures, which do not marry up to most people's realities, and that starts to create anxiety and stress. Yeah. We are also, you know, living in a very commercially driven world, more so than 17, 18 years ago, before Amazon was a thing. Life was a lot simpler. Now we're expected to be constantly buying things we don't need with money we don't have. So, you know, I could go on for hours about this, but, you know, these are just some of the reasons that people are experiencing higher levels of stress that in any point in recorded human history. However, what is fascinating, you know, if we look at it from a statistical perspective, human beings live longer on average, statistically speaking, than any other human beings that have ever populated planet Earth. We are statistically speaking healthier than any other humans that have ever lived before. Healthier because we have access to food, resources, medical technology is advanced, scientific technology is advanced. We're better at sort of monitoring and preempting illnesses and treating them. So, you know, basically we're healthier, we are living longer. Also, we are wealthier. So the poverty line has moved up significantly in the last 20 years alone. You know, three times as many people will die this year of eating too much than not having enough to eat. Now, this again is a massive shift. In the last 20 years, we've gone from millions of people starving to death to millions, if not billions of people eating themselves to death.
Yeah.
So, we've had this massive, significant shift in society where we should be happier than ever before, but we are the most miserable humans, the beings that have ever lived, even though we've got it better than ever before. You know, we talked about the fact that there's about 3 million odd people that take their own lives every year. In the year 2018, there was about 179,000 people that that died of all the wars on the planet put together. If you add in all human violence on the planet put together, he's still up to only about 760,000. Don't quote me in the exact numbers, it's there or thereabouts. So if you think about the fact that there's 55 million people that die on average every year, just the natural churn of human life, if 3 million people are taking their own life, that's a significant percentage, way more than all the wars and all the terrorism, all the human violence put together. But are we scared about human violence? Are we scared about people taking their own lives? Are we talking about this? Are we taking decisive community, national, international action against these kind of things? Are we doing our best to support people that are vulnerable? Or are we spending hundreds of millions and billions of pounds on, you know, the industrial war complex, on bombs, etc., which actually is a far less risk to human civilization? So this is where, you know, when we talk about the real risk, we are not taking action against the things that are really of concern. We are taking the things, action against the things that drive political agendas. And that's for me where I am really concerned, because as Mahatma Gandhi said, you judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable members. Mm-hmm. We are failing the most vulnerable members of our society.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And have been for a very long time.
Yeah. Tell me where alcohol comes into this for you. Because obviously, you know, I don't have experience, you know, of being, you know, suicidal. I feel really blessed that I haven't encountered that. But I've very definitely had massive anxiety in the past, really massive anxiety, and a lot of mental health issues within my family, which I don't know that I even realized the extent of my own anxiety until I stopped drinking. Because when I stopped drinking, I suddenly was able to look back and realize the part that alcohol had played in that. So I'd be interested in your understanding of that.
Yeah, I think culturally, it's been a socially acceptable crutch for many people. We live our lives around alcohol. We use it as a celebration.
And a commiseration.
For a bottle of champagne, or we go for a drink. We use it as a social mechanism. It's a way of engaging and connecting. It's something we use to congregate. This is changing, and I will talk about that in a moment. But you know, the two places that people will congregate are churches and pubs, both of which are now going out of fashion because the younger generation are moving away from these kind of strategies. You know, if someone's sad or depressed, is you know, they might turn to a drink. So there's many reasons that we would turn to alcohol. And I can only talk from personal experience, but this is something that I use as a crutch for the vast majority of my life. Mm-hmm. I would use it to let off steam. I'd use it to have fun. I'd use it when I was down. I'd use it as a pick-me-up. I'd use it if I wanted to escape or take my mind off things. And I've had a kind of an up and down relationship with alcohol for most of my life. And even though that, you know, over the last 16, 17 years, I decided to really look at and evaluate my life, because ultimately when I came into this industry, into this field, my first patient, my first client, my first customer was Neil Sharp, was myself. So I really started to look at myself and my life, and I went through a number of different life-changing some experiences. I started to invest more in my health and well-being. I took up running, I ran marathons, and then got into triathlons. I looked at sort of my diet, which eventually resulted in six and a half years ago going vegan. So, you know, I've taken many, many different steps. But alcohol is one that I've always had this backwards and forwards relationship where I kind of would move away from it for a while, would go back to it. You know, I had periods on and periods off. But when I started drinking, I was very much the kind of person that if I was going to have a drink, I was going to have a drink.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it would be 12 beers or a couple of bottles of wine or half a bottle of vodka or more at times. And that was always concerning because, it would be, for me, alcohol is the biggest gateway drug on the planet. Mm. It leads to so many bad decisions, whether that's dietary, sexual kind of, you know, other drugs. There's so many poor decisions we make when we're under the influence. And if you are stressed and suffering from mental health issues, anxiety, depression, alcohol is only going to make it worse.
I
defy anyone to prove to me that having a drink is going to improve their mental health and their anxiety. Firstly, from a biological perspective, it's just not able to do that. Alcohol is known as a biphasic substance. In small quantities, it stimulates you, but you drink more than a couple of units and it puts you into it has a depressive effect. So it's a very sort of challenging subject. It's a very challenging substance to be putting into your body if you're already mentally, physically, or emotionally compromised. Mm-hmm. But even though I knew this, and I'm sure you can relate to this, that you know, as a professional in your field, there are many things that you know consciously.
You don't make them happen. I know, it's absolutely true. I was exactly the same.
It's very easy to coach other people and what's right and wrong. But there was a couple of things that I was still resistant on. Alcohol was one of them, primarily because a lot of my social networks would revolve around meeting up, food, glass of wine, etc. And I convinced myself it was okay, I could handle it. And eventually I got to the point where I had to really look at this. I had several friends that had given up alcohol. I've got a couple of friends that are ex-alcoholics, and they went through this sort of the 12-step program. Thankfully, I don't know if I'd ever classify myself as an alcoholic, but there was points where I was quite a heavy user. Mm. So I made the decision to do the 1 year no beer, and that was New Year's Eve 2018. That was the last time I had a drink, and I got through the year, and honestly, I've never felt better. And interesting, after the first couple of months of occasionally, you know, you go to the football and some of your mates are having a pint and you kind of feel like having one, or you're at a festival and people around you drinking, you might kind of get that little bit of an urge. But getting a few months in and also discovering wonderful non-alcoholic alternatives.
Yeah, like, I know, isn't it different?
Free spirit and, you know, non-alcoholic beer that actually tastes like beer, where I could actually have something that satisfied the emotional craving, but I wasn't putting alcohol in my body. And I know there are purists that will say, well, if you're giving up alcohol, you shouldn't have a fake alcohol. In the same way, there's a lot of purist vegans that will say, well, if you give up meat, then don't have like the mock chicken or the things that look and taste like meat, even though they're not. But I don't believe in that because I didn't give up meat because I don't like it. I gave up meat because it was the right thing to do. So if I can have something that looks and tastes like meat, wonderful. Again, I didn't give up alcohol because I didn't enjoy alcohol. I still enjoy a pint. I still enjoy a glass of wine. I just choose now to have the non-alcoholic alternative.
Yeah.
So I still would have a non-alcoholic sort of bottle of bubbly to celebrate. That's something that serves me. And I'm not saying that's the right strategy for everyone. But I can honestly say there are... If I talk about some of the top decisions I've made in my life, you know, in the top five, going vegan and giving up alcohol are definitely very near the top of the list.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get on to a few of your tips then. So you obviously do an incredible amount of work with the Stress Management Society and with the work that you do with businesses. What would be your tips right now for individuals who are struggling? I mean, it might even be, you know, what we would consider low level. I think there's quite a lot of people at the moment in this isolation period. I'm trying to call it self-care isolation because I'm trying to encourage people to just not feel stressed about whether or not they've Joe Wixed today, you know, or done a whole load of gardening or baked a million cakes or learnt a language, because that's not for everyone, you know. So I'm trying to help people recognize the most important thing to do at this time is to look after yourself. What would be your tips for helping people literally manage stress through this period?
Well, I guess the first thing I'm going to say is gratitude. Gratitude. Being grateful for the fact that we have collectively as a global society been given the most wonderful, beautiful, incredible gift that I don't know if, you know, I'm not aware that anything like this ever happened before. We're basically we've been told to stay at home and, you know, we're not going to work. The majority of us are not going to work unless we're obviously key workers, and shout out to the NHS and the people that are keeping society moving. But the rest of us, we've been told to stay at home. Life has been simplified in a way that it never has been before. You have been given the gift of time. Your children are off school. You know, you don't have work. When are you ever going to get this opportunity ever again? So how could you use this time? And if that means that you're just going to sit around playing board games or listen to music or just, you know, in the garden with the kids or with the dog or with your partner or just going out for your daily walks, embrace the fact that life has been simplified.
Yeah. Now,
if we think about sort of more on a global scale, you know, what's happening as a result of this, air pollution in Europe is down 80%.
Yeah.
In China, in Beijing, and in cities like Delhi in India, where the pollution is so bad, you can't see more than a few meters in front of you. It's like a thick smog. It's completely gone. In parts of India, you can see the Himalayas for the first time in 100 years. You've got dolphins swimming in the canals in Venice because there are new humans around. Yeah. Now, this is, you know, the planet on a global scale is embracing this.
The planet is healing. Yeah, it is true.
How can you use this opportunity to heal yourself? Take time to make sure you get 8 hours of sleep because you don't have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning for the alarm clock to have your heavy commute to work. How can you use this time to, rather than eating ready meals, to actually take some time to cook fresh food? How can you use this time to spend time with your loved ones when normally we're too busy because there's so much going on in our lives that you just don't have the time to do that? How can you use this time to reach out to your friends, your neighbors, your community? If you can't physically do that with Zoom. How can you use this time to maybe get on top of the things you never had a chance to do, like clear your back bedroom? I did that over Easter. My back bedroom has been filled with boxes ever since my house got refurbished, and I finally got around to clearing it out. You know, the DIY project, read that book you never got around to, write that book that you've been meaning to write. Another thing I'm going to do is there's a new book here that I've been in the process of writing for about a year and written not more than a few chapters.
I'm exactly the same. Exactly the same.
On Time for Happiness, you heard it here first. I'm doing my best to get that book written before lockdown lifts. So, as I said, it's a gift. So ultimately, the first thing is reframe. Now, you can look at this as challenging and stressful and upsetting, or you can reframe it. And you could look at this as a positive opportunity. You can look at, rather than being upset, to be grateful and find the reasons that you can be grateful for this time that we'll probably never get again in our lives. And in 20, 30 years' time, when we're reflecting back on this experience, like people probably did during the war, and they reflected back on the experience of the war. And I don't use that comparison lightly, because you know, this is the closest thing that we're going to get to living through kind of a war type experience. And we are at war, just with a virus, not with another country or whatever. In 20, 30 years, when we reflect back on this experience, and people ask, maybe people that weren't born then, ask, what did you do during coronavirus? What did you do during the lockdown when the world was in chaos?
Yeah.
What's your war story going to be? Is it going to be sat around complaining and moaning and being miserable? Or that you did something positive or constructive with that time?
Yeah, absolutely. Just briefly, though, if there are people who are listening who are even just hearing that makes them feel more stressed because they don't feel positive enough right now, what would be your tip for anyone who is really feels that they're struggling right now with their mental health, I've heard people say that they don't feel, they just haven't got the motivation, they don't have that brain space to, and it kind of almost adds to it that, oh my god, I need to do this, I need to do that. What can we do? Is meditation the answer? Is mindfulness the answer? Is it looking to nature? What would be your number one?
No, and it's a really, really good point. And yeah, I think it's important that we do cover this, because there's a lot of people out there that are probably thinking to themselves, oh, that's great, it's a very grand vision, but I'm struggling to get myself out of bed every day. I think this is where it's important that we've got some simple things that we can incorporate into our daily routine.
Yeah.
You know, as the acronym KISS suggests, keep it stupidly simple. Some people say keep it simple stupid. I don't like that, because I'm calling people stupid. So keep it stupidly simple. Five areas, actually, that I would suggest that we look at: mental, physical, emotional, social, and spiritual. Let's go through them one by one. So mental, what can we do to focus our mind? Focus our mind on things that are going to serve us and uplift us, not focusing on the news and social media, which is going to bring you down. So firstly, what can we do and what can we remove? I would suggest either limiting or removing social media. One of the things I've done, other than for professional reasons, I've come off social media the last month, because I was just finding all the information, all the drama, all the stories, all the fake news, etc., was just bringing me down. I checked the actual news, BBC News, once a day. And so I'm limiting the amount of information I'm being exposed to, and I'm only doing that just to keep abreast of anything important or anything that I really do need to be aware of. WhatsApp groups. I found that a lot of my groups, friends, family, colleagues, where people were circulating and sharing a whole lot of nonsense information. And so I've politely requested people stop doing that. And where that hasn't happened, I'll remove myself from WhatsApp groups, which I'll re-add myself to later. And instead of that, I'm introducing in more practices to mentally focus my mind on things that are positive. So one of the things that you could do is just at the end of every day, when you get into bed, keep a journal next to your bed, write down five things you're grateful for.
Yeah.
And if you can't think of anything else, if you're getting to bed, if you're going to sleep in a bed, you can be grateful for that.
Exactly.
In a bed. If you've eaten some food today, then be grateful for that. If you don't have coronavirus, that's another great thing to be grateful for. There are so many things to be grateful for. Or it could be something wonderful happened, and you could put that down. And doing that, particularly at night when you're going to sleep, it's ending your day with things to be happy for. So that's kind of having a positive impact on your mental focus. Simple activities that can focus your mind, whether that's doing a jigsaw puzzle or just something that keeps your mind positively occupied. Emotional. So mental is what you think. Emotional is what you feel.
Yeah.
So this is where, again, things like the gratitude journal can really help with that. But this is where, engaging people that you care about and sharing positive news, stories that will uplift you, whether that's like kind of subscribing to sort of, there's a variety of different websites and platforms that will literally do that. They'll send you positive information every day. The one that I really love that I subscribe to is called Notes from the Universe. So TUP, Notes from the Universe. And every day you'll get this wonderful message, which is written to you by the universe. So it's as if the universe is a being that sends you a message every day. And just reading that is literally uplifting me, and it's kind of inspiring me. So also with the people that you care and love, whether that's friends, family, children, partner, every day, making a point of sharing things that you care, things about them that you care about, things that you love about them. The approach that we have within my family and also within my colleagues at work is a phrase that begins, "I love you because." Mm. And every day you tell the people around you, "I love you because, you know, I love you, Jamie, because of the wonderful work that you're doing, the amount of people that you're inspiring and uplifting during a challenging time." So, you know, that is a wonderful, simple practice that you can do that's going to have a positive impact on your emotional health. Physical health. Now, we are allowed out of the house once a day for exercise.
Thank you.
Long may that continue.
God, yeah.
And you make use of that hour out of the house. You know, get out for a walk. The weather has been glorious. I know it's been a bit colder the last couple of days. So wrap up warm. Get out there in the sunshine. Ride your bike. Go for a run. You know, spend some time in the garden. And if for any reason you can't get out because you've got symptoms, you need to isolate, walk around the house. Walk up and down the stairs if you have them. You could literally just, you know, do some movement in your room. You could do some yoga, whatever. Some kind of physical movement every day. There is no excuse not to get your 10,000 steps in, because you could literally put the TV on and walk on the spot while you watch a couple of episodes of your favorite box set. So there is no reason that we can't get exercise. You don't need a gym. You don't need equipment. You can use your own resources. You can use the wonderful gift of nature. If you can't walk, you could literally just be raise your arms. If you're stuck in your seat for any reason, that in itself is going to raise your heart rate. So regardless of where you are, what your issues are, what your ailments are, every single one of us has the opportunity to incorporate physical activity, not exercise, physical activity, which is movement. So that's, we covered mental, we covered emotional, we covered physical. Social is the next one. And when I talk about social, I'm not talking about social media. I'm talking about interacting meaningfully with the people that you care about.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I attended an anniversary party. People are like, "What? You went to a party? We've got social distancing." It was a virtual party. It's the first time I've ever done anything like this. There was 35 people on a Zoom call, and it was mayhem at some points because you've got people watching and some people talking over each other. But it was just nice to be, you know, in the presence of friends and family, people that I care about. You know, there are ways that you could get together and organize everyone to get their favorite tipple and have a drink together and be able to really engage socially and meaningfully with the people you care about. And I'm seeing a lot more of this going on. So, you know, maintain your social networks. If you can get out, and even if you're able to do a social distance or physical distance visit, like I went to visit my mom, I stood in the driveway, sat on a deck chair while she was in her front room talking to me out the window. And we had a chat for half an hour. She passed me a cup of tea and a biscuit out the window, and it was lovely. So, you know, we need to be creative and adapt how we're interacting and engaging with each other. So this is where I think there's a tremendous opportunity to make sure that you're just not sitting there feeling miserable and disconnected in isolation. How you can still maintain your social relationships, even in a time where we're not allowed to see each other and come together. And the last one is spiritual. Now, when I talk about spiritual, I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about, you know, reading your favorite kind of religious book or going to a mosque, temple, or church, because you can't actually do that at the moment anyway. When I talk about spirituality, the true meaning of spirituality, you know, not asking anyone to take my word for it, you can look this up in the dictionary. Spirituality quite literally means connection to something beyond myself.
Yeah,
it's my connection to something bigger than me as an individual. That could be any number of things. Yeah. A lot of men that are listening to this, you know, if you ask them what is your connection to something beyond yourself, they're going to say their football team. And you know, a lot, some people might get offended at this, but for me, you know, your football team is a spiritual belief, because it's where people come together, they congregate, they kind of chant and worship and sing in unison for a common goal. You know, whatever it is that you choose to, whatever way you choose to express your spirituality, I think now it's even more important than ever before.
Yeah.
You know, another spiritual practice that we as a nation are engaging in collectively, and some people may not have recognized this as a spiritual practice, 8 o'clock every Thursday evening, we're engaged in a spiritual practice. When we all come outside up front of the book, we spiritual practice.
It's lovely that that's such a collective thing, isn't it? It's true.
And this is where I think now more than ever, we have a tremendous opportunity to explore our spirituality, our connection and belief in something beyond ourselves. And that sense of community is very much intertwined with this sense of spirituality, because it's a collective belief, not an individual belief.
Yeah. I could talk to you for hours, Neil. just to finish off then, just tell us where we can find out more about your work. I know that the Stress Management Society, you have so many amazing resources for people. I love all your incredible graphics, imagery. I mean, what a website. It's a thing, isn't it?
So, yeah, obviously the website is a good place to start, particularly for the month of April. We've got all the Stress Awareness Month challenges and resources that are available to everyone free of charge. And that's www.stress.org.uk. You can find us on Twitter. We're sharing all our stuff on Twitter and Facebook. Very easy to find us on Twitter. We're at StressMGMTSOC. So there's an individual stress test. So you can find out how you're doing. We've got a new tool that's going to go live very shortly, which is how are you coping with lockdown and how it's affecting your emotional well-being, and some tips to be able to ensure you're taking action to increase your resilience during this challenging time. If you are a part of a team or you're more worried about your organization, we have our corporate well-being website, which is International Wellbeing Insights is the name of that organization. That's www.wellbeing.work. Very simple, wellbeing.work. And there's tons of information about what to do in the workplace, for your teams. And even if it's just for your community, there's some great ideas there on things that you can do. The reality is at this time, we really do need to be supporting ourselves and each other. Because, if you think about the getting on a plane, and I know it might be a while before we get back on planes again, but when you get on a plane and they go through the safety instructions, when they talk about what to do if there's a drop in cabin pressure, the mask drop down, they always say before you attempt to put a mask on someone else, children, an older person, or someone might be injured, you have to put it on yourself first, because you cannot help anybody else if you're suffocating and about to pass out yourself. And I think in this current situation, in this crisis that we find ourselves in, looking after ourselves is not a selfish act. It's actually a selfless act. Because the people that are fit and healthy, that are taking care of themselves, are the ones that are best equipped to be able to serve and support those around them, whether that be your family, your community, or society at large. So this is where I'm going to encourage everyone to take care of themselves, look after yourselves, check out our website, tons of free resources and information, and there's more being posted every single day just to ensure that people get the tools they need to be able to navigate this unprecedented experience we find ourselves in.
Yeah. Neil Shah, thank you so much. You've been an amazing guest, so inspirational. Love the work you do, and definitely have you on again at some point. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. It's a real pleasure. Much love to you.
Thank you, Neil. And for Sober Club members, there's a little exclusive bit of content as well that Neil recorded for us specifically around what to do when you feel really anxious and you start to get these cravings. Of course, it's not always for the booze, is it? Some people have found that they're eating far more sugar than they were before. I mean, my take on this would always be that's better than drinking. Of course, make it as healthy as you can. But whatever you've got going on right now, it's a great idea to try and find ways of reframing it, find ways of dealing with it. You can listen to the Club Soda podcast. There's another Club Soda podcast just come out, and I'm one of the people who've contributed. It's a really good podcast with lots of different sort of influencers sharing their tips and talking about what they're currently drinking, which alcohol-free drinks they love. I've done a little piece in there about, well, as you know, I'm calling this time self-care isolation. So you can hear me on that podcast. Don't forget as well that there is a bonus episode of the podcast, if you haven't listened to it already, with Claire Pooley, talking about her novel, The Authenticity Project. Claire was on BBC Radio 2 as well last week, which was really cool. Another thing you might be interested to listen to is an interview that I've done with Patricia Pete from Cancer Options. And that's, you can listen to that on UK Health Radio. If you go over to my other site, imperfectlynatural.com, I'll give you a link to it there. I will run a little bit of that on the podcast at some point, because it's really interesting, her take on the link between alcohol and illness and cancer. It's a fascinating take on it. But right now, if that's a subject that interests you, check that out on UK Health Radio. I've got some great guests coming up. I'm going to be speaking with the founder of Binary Drinks. This is a completely, well, new to me, alcohol-free drink. They call it the Wine Lover's Beer. It's really good. I'm really loving the 0% one. It's just really nice. It's really unusual. It's a kind of like a light beer with a slight fizz, and it's really good. So anyway, I thought that'd be an interesting topic to hear about that. Very unusual in the drinks market. I'm also going to be speaking to Julia Carson, the author of Sober Positive. Ewan from, who's a medical herbalist. That's a really interesting interview. Some really interesting stuff that I love anything to do with holistic health, as I'm sure you know. But I don't think I'd ever really consider the impact of medicinal herbs until I had this conversation with Ewan. It's very mainstream. Don't worry, I'm not going to send you out foraging, although it's not a bad idea. And of course, the nettles are cool at the moment. There's a bit less pollution. So if you want to make yourself some nettle tea, now is as good a time as any. So I'll see you same time next week. Make sure you check out thesoberclub.com. Of course, there's blog posts there. We've got a few little PDFs that you can get, the self-care and sobriety and the 5 reasons to do an alcohol-free challenge. You can watch my TED talk there. If you haven't watched my TED talk, then my TEDx talk, it's called Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? It's only about 12 minutes long. It's quite fun, particularly if you're struggling at the moment. Might just give you a little reason to decide to start again and ditch the booze. As always, reach out if you need any help. You know, if you're concerned about your drinking, please, please, please do not suffer and struggle in silence. You can find me on Instagram at Janie Lee Grace, Facebook at Janie Lee Grace Loves, and there's a little free Facebook group on there if you're interested in health and well-being and natural skincare and all of that stuff. If you have any suggestions for great guests for me, please let me know. I would absolutely love to hear from you. Stay safe, stay well, stay positive. See you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Janie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.